Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Gamescast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, as always, he brings the awesome sauce. He is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
Dude, I was so Greek this weekend.
Opa.
I was hyper Greek, dude.
What happened?
I made myself some roasted lamb and potatoes, a fucking 6-pound leg of lamb.
Yeah, you did.
It was the most glorious thing.
Yeah, you did.
But and I gobbled it up in, you know, a day and a half.
Now, did you feed your extended relatives with this 6-pound?
No, just my brother.
Okay, all right. Because that would be like top level Greek if you just decided to walk it around the neighborhood and give it to the other Greeks in the neighborhood.
No, because I made lamb-witches for lunch.
I get it.
I couldn't have that if I was being generous.
I understand. So.
And you know me, I'm not a generous person.
No,
fuck out of here.
You're low on the list of generous people. Joining us this week, he's one of the founders of Kinda NYC, the brilliant mind behind his musical persona, R Wings. I don't even know if you call it a band because you do every instrument and sing and everything. And he's the host of Platform Agnostic Podcast. He is Mike Toundrow. How are you, buddy?
Hi, friends. I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm good.
Oh, Mike, I just saw a little PlayStation jacket behind you there in your chair.
Yeah,
PlayStation bomber jacket.
Ooh, look at that sexy piece of clothing.
But remember, he's platform agnostic.
And platform agnostic.
That's right. That's right.
What better time than midsummer when it's 90 degrees and humid to spend $125 on a thick-ass bomber jacket?
Right. That's like saying I'm sober, but I have a bar behind me. So, yeah. I don't know. Those things don't go well together.
Also, Steven, I do call R Wings a band. I call R Wings an imaginary band.
Got it. I got it. Imaginary band. I'll make sure to put that in the show notes.
Yes.
In the introduction on the post later on tonight.
Yes, please.
For those of you who are new, I don't want that. I don't want the legal department. I know who your lawyer is, and I have a feeling it's Nicole. So I don't want any of that because we argue.
Contact her.
We argue very loud. This is the Dual Screens Gamescast. This is a show where Andy and I, and sometimes a guest host, bring some news to the table, some video game news, and we want to discuss it for your amusement. Get your input live here on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams and it's posted every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home, podbean.com, and of course, iHeartRadio and Spotify. And ladies and gentlemen, the iHeartRadio and Spotify snafu that we were completely unaware of because literally none of you brought it to our attention. None of you decided to tell us there were 13 missing episodes that from like April 23rd till like 2 weeks ago, you got no episodes, nothing we did. You didn't find it at all weird that we weren't doing anything for that whole time. Did you think we got the COVID? Is that what happened? Whatever. Anyway, our host that handles, the host that handles our Spotify and iHeartRadio account had a glitch where it just hiccuped. It just was not updating that for that time period, but it is now back, so you can go back and listen to those if that's where you listen. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a review. It helps the show out tremendously. Remember, this show records live on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams most Sundays, but this week we did Monday because of Father's Day, and also there was a ton of games coverage to do for Monday, so we wanted to kind of push it back just a little bit so that we can include as much information as we can on this week's show. So before we get into the show proper, let me just tell you really quickly, if this is your first time listening, if you're somebody that listens to Platform Agnostic, or you're just a fan of Kinda NYC and you don't know the show that we do here, we actually do three shows on one channel. So we actually have Dual Screens Gamescast, which you're listening to. We also have the Dual Screens Podcast, which is our flagship show where we interviewed over 100 indie devs and voice actors from all around the world. And that's our interview show where everybody has a story to tell and we want to give them a platform to do it. So check that out. We also have seasonal content, which we're in the middle of Dual Screens Versus, which we just did a show with FNH Paul, twitch.tv/FNH Paul. He's a really, really good dude and he was hilarious and he was a great host. So you could also check that out on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And if you want to support us with your hard-earned cash, you go to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like new daddy and our Patreon producer, Colton, the apprentice Nestler. Every little dollar helps. So if that's something you want to do, All right, let's get into the show. Andy, mm-hmm. it's time for everybody's favorite future t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
It is time for the adventures in gaming. Gaming, 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 gaming. Mike, what have you been playing?
Well, I am currently 8 hours into The Last of Us Part 2. That's all I'm going to say. I don't want to talk about it. We'll get there.
Yeah.
I'm currently playing it very slowly because I'm playing it with Kelsey, my mm-hmm. fiance.
Mm-hmm.
And as a boy who's currently on furlough and has nothing to do all day, and somebody, and Kelsey, who's still working, I have to wait for her mm-hmm. until like 7 p.m. every night to play for like maybe an hour, which is very difficult.
That's
okay. But no, we put in like a good 5 hours this afternoon, and boy, nice. That game, man.
That sure is a game. That sure is a game.
but in between that, I've also been playing the Pokemon DLC.
Nice, nice. What are your thoughts?
What was that, Steve?
What are your thoughts on the DLC?
I love it. It's the story itself. The adventure itself. It's short, sweet, to the point. I love that the full DLC is just one big giant wild area. Very simple, like tasks to get you through into the new areas. I like that the quote unquote quests are specifically to get you to the different areas of the new wild area. Because the whole point of the new DLC is to introduce you to the 200 plus newly added Pokemon. And it's rad. It's super fun. And it's great to have like an expanded Pokedex again. And we're going to get another expanded Pokedex later this winter. Yeah, it's awesome.
Our editor-in-chief over at dualscreens.com actually did a kind of impressions. Not like a review. It wasn't like an officially scored review. But he had a lot of positive things to say. I mean, he does go off to say that, you know, for the hardcore, there's really not a lot here. It's more just expanded the casual player will eat this up essentially, but like the hardcore kind of run through it real quick, which is fine. I mean, whatever adds anything. Now I want to ask you, because I know you're a huge Pokemon fan. Did you also feel that the base game was not really a complete game, or were you on the fence of, you know, it's a new generation, it's a new whatever, they had to scale back to, like, you know, go forward with the vision and all that stuff?
Right. I love the base game. The base game is probably my favorite mainline Pokemon game.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Granted, I think I say that with almost every new entry of Pokemon, just because of the new introductions to the new mechanics and just tightening up mechanics, stuff like that. This game just feels incredible to play. Even, like, small things like just being able to skip the intro of how to catch a Pokemon and things like that.
Right.
And something a lot of people complained about is that the story of the game, like what the actual like plot of the game was happening in the background, like all around you. I like that because, sort of spoilers for Pokemon Sword and Shield, all that stuff is introduced in the post game. Because usually when I'm playing a Pokemon story or a Pokemon like adventure, I'm like, all right, I just want to get through the next gym. Let's just get, you know, I want to continue on my adventure. I want to get to Elite Four. Okay, goddamn Team Rocket, stop interrupting me. Okay, Aqua, I get it. You out. Flood the fucking world. Cool. Let me get my badges. I like that this game, the main quest is, you are a trainer. Let's fucking get the badges. Become champion. Awesome. You're champion now. Okay, let's deal with this crazy fucking shit that's going on.
Right.
I really like that. And honestly, you were talking about like how we scaled back for a new generation. I wish we scaled back even more. I wish there was only new Pokemon on this. I wish it did the black and white thing where it was just a brand new Pokedex, like flat. Especially with the decision of like not introducing the national decks. I don't know why they just didn't start with like just Galar.
Yeah, why if you're not gonna go all in, why do that at all? I guess exactly, like, the answer is probably money.
Well, of course. You have to have Pikachu in the fucking game.
Yeah. And you know, they can sell additional Pokemon now for $20, you know, a pack. For God knows how long, you know? But Andy, what have you been playing, handsome? I know you've been playing The Last of
Us
also.
It's all Last of Us 2. I see you at 2 in the morning. You see me. Mm-hmm. That's how it goes down. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, he's playing it. He's like, I'm playing the game. All right. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Brutal. I have never seen a more beautiful game in my life.
I want to say off the bat, before this will be a huge topic in the show later on, but I want to say how I really commend them for just going all in on the violence. It holds nothing back, this game. It does. I mean, the graphics are amazing, the gameplay is vastly improved, but the violence factor is upped to an insane degree, and I'm relishing every moment of it.
Dude, it's fucking brutal. It is wild.
I feel every stab in the neck and it's pure joy.
Yes, it's. But there have been several moments. Spoiler alert: I am also playing The Last of Us 2. That is also the game I am playing. And there's one other game that I actually started playing again after many years of an absence. But yeah, dude, it's. I got a lot of Resident Evil 4 vibes with this game. Just the way you kind of move around, and plus you can. There's so many customizations you can do for gameplay and for difficulty and all of that stuff that it almost feels like a Resident Evil game the way I'm playing it. Mm-hmm. I'm more of like a running, like I do stealth. I love the stealth in this game as opposed to Last of Us 1. Last of Us 1, I absolutely hated the stealth. I thought it worked against you at every turn, every possibility. In this game, it feels like they were like, oh no, like we need to make this at least. It doesn't need to be fun and hunky dory, but it needs to be enjoyable to get from point A to point B.
Right. Well, for me, I said I felt like it was like a little bit of Metal Gear Solid 5 light. Like it was these little chunks of the city where, okay, there's open buildings. How do you attack each enemy? Yeah. Like, do you go under a car? Do you go around them? Do you throw a bottle?
I had two instances. Clickers. I had two instances where I didn't fight at all. Like I made my way all the way through.
No, no, you spare no one.
Oh no.
Sorry. They all must die. That's how it goes.
But let me explain.
I will go out of my way to murder.
The reason why this happened though, was because I was trying to get position on them and it just happened that I avoided them all. Like, cause there's no obvious path for anything.
Right.
You can go as long as there's buildings and, you know, something to climb, like you can go pretty much anywhere. You get this, like, it's almost like you get an arena to battle in each conflict, and you can completely, and there's guys everywhere. It's not like you are avoiding everybody on purpose, but it's like,
right,
oh, there's a lot of dudes there, but there's two up here. And it just so happened that when I went up to those two, they actually walked away, and now the other people are behind me, but they don't see me. So I just wound up getting through it without fighting anybody, and then like at the end they'll find me and they'll start shooting, and I'll just run and get through to the, you know, to the whatever point, you know, the next story beat. But I've never seen something as beautiful in my life.
I want to say one more thing is that no dogs were harmed in my entire walkthrough of The Last of Us 2. The dogs were spared, which is not easy to do.
I've heard it's not easy to do.
Those can hunt you down with the whole like smelling your aura situation. Oh, getting your scent.
Yeah, they track you and all that stuff. Yeah. And I wasn't as fortunate.
I am like 15 hours in, and no dog has been killed so far.
I'm just about 15 hours as well, I think. Yeah, I think nice. I just hit the 15 hour mark. So the other game that I decided to start playing, since I am just ridiculously wealthy in Animal Crossing, I needed another fix. So I actually started playing Fallout Shelter again on my phone.
Wow. All right. Why?
Just needed that management fix. That I don't know. That game is really good. I miss how I missed that. Yeah, it's really good. Fallout Shelter is really, really good. I think it's probably one of, if not the best mobile game out there. Like the way
it is the best Fallout game there is.
It's the best Fallout game since Fallout New Vegas.
That's the best Fallout game lately.
Yes. Yeah. Came out 5 years ago.
Right.
All right, folks. That's not the only game that I've been playing this week, because right before The Last of Us came out on Friday, or actually midnight, I guess it was Thursday night that I started playing it. There's also another little game that I like to play called Apex Legends. And it is time, ladies and gentlemen, for a minute of Apex Legends. I know you're all excited for this. Boy, oh boy, ladies and gentlemen, there are huge changes coming to Apex Legends, folks. Every character is getting a major change. It's absolute insanity. It's insanity. Lifeline can now revive people with her bot. She no longer has to actually physically pick them up. She could use her bot, it revives them, and then she could just start shooting and protecting. It's crazy. Or she could pick up another person. What? That's insane. Watson's ult has been nerfed. Now it only works for 90 seconds, but she could hoard more ultimate accelerants so she could get more of them off, which is actually pretty cool. I mean, dude, guys, you don't understand. They changed the whole game. They changed everything. And they're begging us to use the Sentinel still because they keep buffing it. They keep making the best sniper rifle in the game better. I don't understand it. But you know what else I learned? You know what else I learned, guys? I learned that the Mozambique is an automatic shotgun. I had no idea that you could hold the trigger and take three shots right away. I had no idea. And that is a minute of Apex Legends.
Oh, thank God it's over.
I think that went well.
That felt longer than the pandemic.
It's always a minute too long, that segment.
That was exactly 1 minute, so I don't want to hear it.
Right, right.
All right, it's time for the indie news update. This is where we dive into some of the indie games that impressed us throughout the week, whether they were revealed or something that we played or whatever, something on the horizon. Andy, first I want to kick it to you because the Sea of Stars trailer. Oh, boy.
Hell yeah, dude.
Oh, dude, boy.
How could a game that's made of pixels look so fucking phenomenal? And I have to wait 2 years for this goddamn game? 2022, you fucking kidding me with this shit?
And that's why they don't announce games early like they do movies. That's why, because of people like
I got
you,
a very,
you
um,
can't be patient.
I got some Breath of Fire vibes from that gameplay. Was it only me? I sensed some of that kind of vibe going on there. But of course, you know, the Messenger team knows how to make great games, and seeing them go to a dramatic genre shift from a side-scrolling game to a full-blown RPG, and that it looks and plays that good. Ugh.
Yeah, dude.
Why 2 years? Why?
That's just the way the cookie crumbles, man. You gotta let art. Mm-hmm. You gotta. They're like peacocks. You gotta let them. They gotta let them
right.
fly. You know what I mean?
Fly.
Gotta let them fly. Mike, you actually watched. I was watching you watch when you did a watch along of the what the hell is it called? The Day of the Devs. Yes. What were your standout highlights from that?
Well, first off, with Sea of Stars, I love that they're getting the composer of Chrono Trigger to do some pieces of music. That's incredible.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. That's kind of like it's a slow trend happening right now with like legendary composers attaching themselves to indie projects. There's this and Bloober Team's new game. I was about to say film. Game.
The medium. With the
Silent
Hill. Kiriyamoka. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, goddamn. Hell yeah. That's awesome. My favorite game is I wrote them all down as I was watching and reacting. My favorite game that I didn't know about before the show is Panzer Paladin.
That game's beautiful. Awesome, dude.
So, I didn't. A lot of people in chat were saying that was playable at PAX East. Yes. I totally missed that shit. I'm so jealous that I missed it.
They had a much bigger booth this year, too. Like, they had a whole.
Yeah, how could you miss it? It was gigantic.
I have no idea.
They had a giant mech.
Hey, you guys saw the state of my well-being during PAX East. I was
true.
Not in good shape. Your boy was patient zero during this whole pandemic.
Oh, man. Oh, that's what you were. A little sick boy.
Oh, I was a very sick boy.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies to Kyle Stevenson who shared a bed with me.
Yikes.
Yeah. No, I mean, it looks incredible. It looks like this is going to be a weird way to put it, but like a spiritual successor to Shovel Knight, like the Shovel Knight sequel that we haven't gotten yet. Plus, like, Blaster Master, plus hints of Castlevania, plus a fucking weapon creation system. What?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
That's bananas.
And I didn't know one of the guys behind on that team was behind the Scott Pilgrim game. That's so cool.
It's so funny because in 2019, the guy, Jean-Francois, he had one TV, I think. Oh, no, two. He had two TVs, a tiny little kiosk. And there was this, all Andy and I saw were just, actually, I think it was when Andy and I split up and I caught it.
You were the first to see it. You passed by it at some point.
And I caught it. And I did one of the, I was like, huh? Yeah. And then I get in there and it was rough, but I mean, you could tell that it was a labor of love. And then this year at PAX, it was completely different. Like, oh my God, the guy has put in that team has put in so much work. They had little capture stations where, while press was playing, they captured everything for you on a thumb drive,
awesome.
Which is really cool. Yeah. And I put a link in the chat if you're watching live on twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams of my interview with the creator of the game with some of my B roll in it as well. So you could check that out. Go to youtube.com/dualscreenstv. But yeah, that game is going to be phenomenal. What else stood out to you?
I mean, one of my most anticipated games for a while now, Skate Story. Every time I see Skate Story, I'm blown away. Shout out to Sam Eng. I met him at PAX East. He's an incredible human being. It just looks like a weird as all hell skating adventure game that it plays like a combination of Session and like traditional skate, like the flick tricks kind of thing. But the difference is that it has a heavy focus on foot placement, so it tries to be a little more grounded in and grounded in mechanics, but surrounded by this weird story of that you are a skateboarder skating into the underworld trying to retrieve something. Looks stunning. It looks at PAX East it played phenomenally already, and I cannot wait to get my hands on it.
There's only one skating game that I want in my life.
Skateboard?
That's correct.
Yes.
That's of course. That is the correct answer.
What else stood out to you? Anything else?
Let's see. Artful Escape again. Played at PAX East.
If you really put cool too.
Dude, give me a protagonist with a guitar and a jamming button. Yeah, that's a Mike S game. You fucking kidding me? Foregone coming to console. Hell yeah.
Oh, Foregone.
Have you been playing the beta on Epic?
No. I played it at PAX East, but I have not played it.
Because they have basically most of the game up on Epic. But yeah, that game's unbelievable too. I did a first play of that also on our YouTube channel. So if you want to check that out, check out me playing the game. You could do that at youtube.com/dualscreensTV. All right. So is that it? Is that all that stood out to you? Is that what you want to highlight?
Yeah, I think those are the big ones for me.
Cool.
Want to give a shout out to just like the production of the show. Also, like,
it was a great show.
Very, very well put together. I love the flow of it. The pacing was incredible. It, like, my issue with the EA show the other night, like, I love listening to developers talk. Like, don't get me wrong, that's not what I'm trying to say here. But like, show us what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't lead us on and like trying to make us like imagine what you are actually talking about. Like, what this did was like, okay, a quick intro from somebody who clearly has a passion for indie games. Either it was a Double Fine employee or somebody from I Am 8-Bit, and clearly those people know what the fuck they're talking about. And then you show this great lengthy gameplay demo with the dev actually explaining what is going on. Beautiful. And especially for in the state of the world that we live in, like everything produced from home and stuff like that, incredibly, like, it was just like, I can't believe that this was like a quarantine video.
Yeah, it's speaking of quarantine videos, we got probably by far the most wholesome and just awesome quarantine home video presentation today with the Smash Direct with Sakurai.
Hell yes.
He's like, hey, this is my home. This is where I live. Hopefully things are better now, because when I made this, things are kind of not good. But here's Smash Brothers. So... we had the Smash Bros. Ultimate, and we're in the dual screens report now. We had a Smash Bros. Ultimate presentation. We got the ARMS fighter that had been teased for a couple of months now, and it looks like everyone was wrong, and we got Min Min. Literally nobody I asked thought this. I know, Mike, you thought we were going to get all eight fighters. Yeah. Or whatever. I thought it was going to be Spring Man and Ribbon Girl, like a Echo thing. Because they were kind of like the poster children of the game.
That made the most sense,
Well, I forgot until they showed it. I forgot Springman was a sis trophy. So that...
Right, yeah, I guess out. That definitely would have ruled them out. But what we got here was Min Min. It was a really cool video. Like, they've been doing better and better with these character reveals. But it was a simple thing. It was Kirby and Captain Falcon sitting there eating ramen. And being served by somebody, and an invitation lands in the ARMS arena, and all the ARMS fighters are fighting over it, and then eventually Min Min enters the battle and gets the invitation. Then the cook or the server of Captain Falcon was revealed to be Min Min. And I can't speak to her mechanics because, like, I'm not a huge fucking nerd. I'm not a huge fucking Smash Bros. Nerd like some of you people out there, but she does look really cool. And Mike,
Don't hang out with Watson, you son of a bitch.
you're one of those huge nerds, aren't you? You're one of those.
Yeah, I guess I am, Steve.
So what can you tell us about the mechanics of Min Min that stood out to you, something that caught your eye?
Yeah, just a shout out to all the DLC characters in general. All the DLC characters are so unique and so complex compared to the base characters in any Smash game so far. Min Min is really cool in particular because she has the longest range of, like, clearly she has springs for arms, so obviously she would have long range, but the longest range of any character, so that's gonna be a very interesting dynamic versing, like, with certain matchups. Her weakness being no close range combat, so it was like, usually when somebody like a character excels in something, obviously they have a weakness, so
the drawback.
Cool, so it's cool that, like, I think this is like the first character who really has like a very weak close game, which is very cool. One of my favorite things, though, is that she has like a dual side smash. So like you hit side and A at the same time.
Yep.
You charge up your smash, let go, massive smash attack, send the guy off out in the arena. But at either simultaneously or back to back, you could do the same thing with B, and it's like kind of like a double hit kind of thing. Super fucking weird. I'm so interested to see how that actually like
that plays. Did you play ARMS?
I played it for 20 minutes at the Switch
That's
preview.
That's kind of how you had to grab people, I guess, was you had to like put both arms out. And yeah, it was, I guess that's kind of a play on using two different arms. Cause you could swap out what the arms do too. I guess that's like the different attacks.
Yeah. She's got different. That's another thing that seems very unique to this character is that you can actually choose your arms or choose your weapons and all of them have very different kind of feels and mechanics to them, including speed and stuff like that. That's super cool.
And it's very, very, ARMS. Like that's how ARMS was. ARMS was all about the arms you chose and how you fitting to your play style and your opponent's play style and kind of bouncing off that. It's going to be interesting to see how she interacts with all of the other characters. Like I feel like a character that's really up in your face, like the sword boys, every sword boy is going to like have a field day with Min Min, at least on the surface for me, but that's not the only reveal that we got. We also had some new amiibo figures coming out in the fall
that he hid behind his plant, which I fucking love.
Yes, he was just like, there they are, my plant. So we got Joker from Persona 5, and Hero from Dragon Quest or Dragon, whatever the hell it's called.
Warrior. I am all about that Joker
amiibo. It looks really cool, but I'm not a huge fucking nerd. Like
that would be the best part of the show, in my opinion, was that fucking Joker amiibo. I was like, that's what I want.
Sorry, was Vault Boy not?
Sorry, Min Min.
Yes, Vault Joker Boy figure was definitely something I was looking that I liked. We got a Vault Boy Mi fighter, so that was cool.
Right, that was cute.
Which all but confirms Fallout 4 is coming to the Switch, in my opinion.
Yeah, of course.
Like. Or like a Fallout 3 plus New Vegas little collection, which I would gladly play again. Gladly over 4 for sure. Can you imagine doing base building on that small screen?
No.
Like that. I don't want to. That was miserable on my 50-inch television. I can't imagine. Oh, God. No. No, thank you.
Dude, I'm shocked that we haven't gotten a Fallout 3 port or a New Vegas port.
Something. Yeah, I mean.
It's only a matter of time. Those things, it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah, it has to be. All right, Andy, so why don't you tell us what your first story is? What do you bring to the table?
Well, speaking about things that are just inevitable and eventual, Crash Bandicoot 4 is happening. It's real. It feels like E3 is still around because we got some leaks before announcements. I love how this was leaked by a Taiwanese rating board, and then we saw full box art and screenshots, and then I think it was Activision that was just like, yeah, it's real. We'll see your trailer tomorrow, you guys, so don't worry about it.
Well, even before that, new merch leaked out, I believe.
Right, yeah.
With like new art assets and whatnot. Like, yeah, hell yeah.
And then we saw this trailer, and it was phenomenal.
It was incredible.
It's the core gameplay is Crash Bandicoot. And I got some Sonic Adventure 2 a little bit out of that trailer. And I love how we have the team that brought us, I think it was Spyro the Dragon remake that's working on this game.
Toys for Bob.
Right. And they've now moved on to giving us the old games made new to now a full-fledged new sequel in the Crash Bandicoot franchise. And I love the shade that the end gave to all the games post-Crash Bandicoot 3 Warped.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, you fought this game how many times? Just three. Three? Yeah. Yeah. I thought it was more.
Nope. Just the three.
Dude, this looks like a proper sequel to Warped. Right. That fills my heart so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, great news for gamers that would love that. I wasn't a big Crash guy. Even now, I look at the gameplay and I'm kind of like, it seems a little bit too twitchy / I don't know. Like, it doesn't feel like a true like 3D platformer to me, but whatever. I know some people love it, and that's great. I'm down with that. There was
makes you wonder.
Yes,
I had a thought. Imagine if, let's say, we have like now Blue Point making a Demon Souls remake.
Yeah,
your dreams, baby.
If they were to do like a Demon Souls 2 after that, could you imagine that?
Also, everybody wanted a Shadow of the Colossus sequel from them.
Right.
That would be awesome.
But that could be a trend. Like, okay, you've done the remake. You've proven your worth. Now give us a sequel. We trust you with an actual proper sequel. All you.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, going off that Demon's Souls concept, like From mm-hmm. Software said they don't want to do Souls games anymore. So right. like, yeah, I mean, granted, Elden Ring is a Souls game, whatever.
Sure. Yeah. That's, yeah.
We want to do Armored Core again, which is a Souls game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pain in the ass that Armored Core was. There was some other news that dropped today that Andy and I did not put in the doc, but I want to kick it over to Mike because I think you're excited about this. There was some WB Games situation, some news, some little
whispers.
Yeah, some whispers in the wind.
Oh yes, I recall reading this.
Mm-hmm. So supposedly, Rocksteady is making a Suicide Squad game.
Why?
I'm gonna echo that sentiment. Why?
Yeah. So I have the article pulled up from GamesRadar. New domains related to Suicide Squad surfaced over the weekend as one reset error user spotted. The first registered on June 16th is simply Suicide Squad Game. The second is a more descriptive domain that was registered on June 17th. Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League.
Interesting.
Supposedly this and the WB Montreal Batman game will be teased at DC's Fandom on August 22nd.
Now, was there a tweet confirming the Suicide Squad thing? I thought I saw a tweet that confirmed it.
No, if you're listening,
let us know. I thought I saw something today. You know what? I'm gonna search the old Twit Space.
Love the Twit Space.
So this idea, I kind of like it because you have the Batman trilogy from Rocksteady Games. And everyone was like, give us a Superman game or a Justice League game or a Batman Beyond game. They're like, nah, we're gonna give you Suicide Squad instead.
Just to confirm, their last tweet was from Rocksteady. Their last tweet was from May 27th. They were saying hello to Bean and Wobbles, which are ducks, Zeus, a husky,
perfect,
and a bunny. Oh, I'm sorry, it's a cat named Bunny.
Perfect.
That was very confusing because they couldn't see the creature.
Perfect. It all looks like so here's my confusion. Report: Rocksteady working on Suicide Squad. Report: colon.
Nope.
That's not how that works.
It's your reporting on a rumor. Report. Yeah. Someone thinks this is happening.
Rumor.
What I don't understand is how is this domain registered, or like how is this tied to Rocksteady?
Well, let's see, because IGN had put up an article, and sometimes they're a little bit better here. Right. No, I'm not whitelisting you. I'm sorry. They say according to Eurogamer, they were registered by WB Interactive.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But like, how like, are we just assuming that Rocksteady is working on this? Is that just
there's Montreal and Rocks.
It's gonna be a mobile game, you'll see. It's gonna happen.
Swipe.
It's gonna be in time for Suicide Squad 2 movie to come out. It's a movie tie-in.
Didn't that happen already?
No.
Birds of Prey?
We had Harlequin. That wasn't the Suicide Squad sequel.
Oh, really?
Sort of was.
Who knew?
1.5. It's a spinoff.
1.5, sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Whatever.
I mean, whatever. Like, if Rocksteady's working on a Suicide Squad game, fuck yeah. I want a new Rocksteady.
Just what are you doing with your life at this point? Is what I
want
to know.
Give me what I want. All right. So this story made waves today. This is coming from TheVerge.com. Microsoft is shutting down Mixer and is partnering with Facebook Gaming. This is huge. And a lot of conversations were happening all over the internet and the Twitter and the Facebook and the Foch Libre and all that fun stuff. So, Microsoft, I'm just going to read a little bit of this. Microsoft is closing its Mixer service on July 22nd and plans to move existing partners over to Facebook Gaming. The surprise announcement means Mixer partners and streamers will be transitioned to Facebook Gaming starting today, and Microsoft will no longer operate Mixer as a service in a month's time. They struggled, yada, yada. Microsoft is partnering with Facebook to transition existing Mixer users and streamers over to Facebook in the coming weeks. On July 22nd, all Mixer sites and apps will automatically redirect to Facebook Gaming. Existing Mixer partners will be granted partner status with Facebook Gaming, and any streamers using Mixer monetization program will be granted eligibility for Facebook's Level Up program. Mixer viewers with outstanding Ember balances, channel subscriptions, or Mixer Pro subscriptions will receive Xbox gift card credit. Microsoft's choice to partner with Facebook is clearly a strategic one that also related to broadening the appeal of its upcoming xCloud gaming service with its overall gaming efforts. Now, one of the crazy things that I saw, and I don't think this one has it, maybe it does, was that apparently the Ninja and Shroud were offered double their Mixer deal to move to Facebook, and they declined it, instead taking a buyout from Microsoft and Mixer. And I think Ninja's was $30 million and Shroud's was $10 million. And now they are free agents and free. I'm sure they have some sort of non-compete, I would imagine, after being bought out. I don't know how that works, but at least like a timed one. I imagine they go right back to Twitch, and there are a lot of unforeseen consequences for a lot of different people, not just the people who are streaming on Mixer, but also, I would say, the people on Twitch. What say you, Andy?
Well, first off, do you hate Facebook that much? God damn. It's like, nope. You can keep your hundreds of millions of dollars.
I could tell you this, Andy. As somebody who decided to try Facebook over Twitch when I'd started Batchild, the appeal of Facebook is that everybody I know has a Facebook, so everybody, almost everybody, could instantly know that I'm streaming or doing something on Facebook.
It's in their feed instantaneously.
The barrier to get in the Level Up program, or the barrier for all of that, is so much higher than Twitch, and they bury so many of the monetization options and the partner stuff. Like, you need a PhD in this shit to get things running, I felt, to get the ball rolling, all the checklist stuff that you have to do, and, you know, sign up here, and then you have to put your tax information here, and then it felt very, very convoluted, to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm gonna go back to Twitch is what I know. I don't have a manager that can handle these deals for me. I don't have somebody that could, you know, run my brand for me. I have to do this all myself. So I went back to Twitch, and it looks like, according to Buzz in our chat, Ninja already updated his Twitch page. So I guess that answers that question.
I do want to say I respect Microsoft for just letting Mixer die, because, you know, they tried to make it relevant in that space of streaming, like where Twitch is. Mm-hmm. And getting folks like Ninja to help bolster the Mixer brand, I guess, didn't do much for them. And just letting it just have a nice little death, as opposed to YouTube Gaming, where I feel like that is a failure in a lot of ways, and they just keep throwing more money at it to keep it alive, because that's, Google is very arrogant about their own brands and thing, and they can't have failures in that realm.
Well, you're right and wrong here, because YouTube Gaming had the second biggest growth year to year as far as hours watched.
Right, but again, what's the base number?
They had 279 million hours watched in April 2019, and 461, a 65% increase.
Right, whereas, but what do the numbers look like? What do Twitch's numbers look like?
Twitch went up 98%. And Facebook Gaming went up 238%, and Mixer went up 0.2%.
Oh my God.
Nobody wanted those Mixpots.
Yeah. No one wanted that shit.
The industry.
Nobody wanted their Viva Pinata codes.
What was so bad about it?
I think.
Like, I never watched a streamer on Mixer or any of their shows before. Was it a bad platform? Like, what was wrong with it?
I usually watch Xbox's show on Mixer on my Xbox to get the stupid Mixpot shit that I never use.
Sure.
And I don't know why I do it. Oh, free Sea of Thieves content? Sure. Maybe
one day I'll play it.
I mean, it's nice. It worked. Like, it was fine. I don't know.
I think it's hard to be the new kid on the block when you don't innovate and you don't change on a massive scale. Like, you can argue Mixer was better for streamers in a lot of ways, as far as getting good looking streams running, streamlining chat, very slight delay. But again, just like, you know, Windows Phone, they just didn't get that shit out there. They didn't make it sexy enough for people to want to do it. And if Ninja and Shroud aren't bringing people to your platform to use the platform, I mean, honestly, these numbers, these growth numbers and all that stuff are pretty much indicative of the dichotomy between PlayStation, Nintendo, and Microsoft as far as console gaming too. It's like they're making innovations. They change the game for console gamers with Game Pass and all that stuff, but they still didn't move the units that you would expect that to have done. And I feel like Mixer was the same thing. They innovated. They changed the game. They made it much cooler, much easier, much more appealing, but it didn't incentivize people to use the platform. They just didn't quite get that breakthrough, that kind of glass. The one thing that I think it did, rising tide rises all boats, right? Twitch got way better when Mixer started to threaten them. When Mixer took Ninja, I don't know if you saw it, Mike, but like just doing stuff on Twitch with the points that you get when you're streaming, the bits and the all that stuff, I feel like everything got way better over the course of the last year or year and a half or so. Right. And YouTube, I mean, it's obvious YouTube got better. I mean, 65% for YouTube is huge. That's a huge growth in numbers, but they're still a third of what Twitch does. So I digress. Hmm. Yeah. Buzz says that they took the channel leveling up and stuff from Mixer. So, I mean, yeah, Mixer came in with some really cool ideas.
Right. Yeah. Still.
But
that's how it works in this
industry. I guess
industry,
they need a new PR. Do they need like a new not PR, advertising. Well, they need advertising.
You can't just money hat the top streamers and pray that'll transfer that success rate. We'll get this whole cult-like following over. It doesn't work that way.
I mean, it's kind of like the same shit as like Fortnite. Like Apex introduced pinging. Fortnite stole it. It's the same shit with Twitch and Mixer.
And redeploy beacons.
Yeah.
Same shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, but yeah, platforms are going to do the same thing. Like if somebody introduces something cool, okay, cool. Let's take it and call it something different.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Exactly.
Like when iPhones stole copy and paste from other phones.
Oh, did we get new iPhone news today?
We did not.
Oh, I was going to say, what 2018 Android stuff did they take this time?
Right. Yeah.
I'm a big WWDC fan. I watch all 3 hours every year.
All right, Andy, why don't we kick it over to you? What's your next story? You bring to the table?
Now, this is a rumor, but it's also a reporting. It's a report, according to some people.
Here we go.
So evidently, the current generation version of Resident Evil 8 Village, quiet dog, has been scrapped. Now, this comes courtesy of a Twitter user, Aesthetic Gamer, who promised me Silent Hill for PS5, and he let me down so he can go fuck himself properly.
That's right.
But beside that, he was saying that essentially that the scope of the game and the loading times grew so big that they had to can the current gen version. So, because there's a bigger focus on exploration, this would lead to last-gen console versions having notable issues, and it was holding back how pretty they could make certain scenes.
Oh,
fascinating.
Then what just looks so pretty?
I guess the scenes in Resident Evil 8 were being held back in their sexiness by current-gen hardware. So, I mean, true or not, I think it raises an important question, and that is, should this be the approach for games like, let's say, an Assassin's Creed Valhalla or a Cyberpunk? I mean, these games were in the works for a long time, but should we have cross-generation games if they're going to hold back, if the current gen holds back the next-gen version of that game to some extent?
Mike, I'll start with you.
Yeah. I think it kind of depends on the franchise, right? Like, mm-hmm. Something like Assassin's Creed, I mean, what, it's 2020, right? So we're guaranteed to get another Assassin's Creed in what, 2022? So like that'll be just the next, like, okay, this is crushed in. We have to hold back a little bit for Valhalla, but Valhalla 2, whatever, Odyssey 2, whatever it is. That could be like the full fledged, okay, now it's the time to take advantage of this console. 3 years in, okay, we learned the tools. Let's fucking go all in. That's when you could abandon it. But something like Cyberpunk, I'm honestly kind of surprised that Cyberpunk didn't just shift. Granted, that'll be a huge betrayal to a lot of fans. Like, I personally, one of my friends bought a PS4 for Cyberpunk. Like, he bought the Spider-Man edition. I was like, yeah, and look at the Cyberpunk game. It's coming out, PS4, cool. Like, people like him would be fucking furious if he has to buy another potentially $600.
Right, and with all those delays, too, that Cyberpunk is getting, and the more recent one, which was pushed back to November, a two-month delay.
Sounds like a great day to launch an Xbox.
Right.
That's my birthday, by the way. That's the date.
I ain't buying you shit.
You figured out, sir. Start saving. Start saving that cash.
But with Resident Evil, like, Resident Evil is one of my favorite franchises, and selfishly, I'm like, yeah, no, fuck that. Abandon last gen. I want a full fledged next gen Resident Evil game.
That's
like,
how I feel. Exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things that, like, if you announce this 2 years ago for current gen and then you make the shift, it's a lot harder pill, a lot more difficult pill to swallow.
That's a different situation. Yeah,
but that's what we did with Cyberpunk.
That's you promised something and now you're going, well, things have changed. Now we have this new toy that does things better. So fuck the old shit. We got new hotness in its place.
And granted, with Resident Evil, Resident Evil is it is becoming an annualized franchise. So like my argument with Assassin's Creed fucking kind of contradicts that a little bit. Because if we are getting Resident Evil 4 next year, like, okay, then yeah, that could be like the full-fledged next-gen thing. But still, no, I want to be selfish with my franchises, and I want a full-fledged Resident Evil right now.
Because for me, I can think of two games top of my head, Mortal Kombat X and Metal Gear Solid 5, two games that had cross-gen, and the at that point, the 360 version, the PSD versions were horribly gimped.
Yeah.
And it makes you think, like, how could the PS4... Xbox One versions look like if they were just made for those consoles? And the answer is, oh, look at Mortal Kombat 11. Well, how nice that looks, because it was just for one console.
Yeah, and especially because I mean, they didn't say a date yet, but I'm assuming this is launching in the usual Resident Evil window of January.
January to February.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like in January, I'm gonna be all in on my PS5. I don't want to play a gimped version.
Right.
Right.
Like I want just next gen games at that point, but I'm also a spoiled brat who wants his shiny new toys.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah, and yeah, you know what? I also don't buy into this. I see a lot of people saying on like Reddit and forums how if you were to abandon the current generation platform, you're leaving behind millions of possible potential sales. And I'm just like, that's not how it works. People will buy in the new system and they'll buy the new game. Like, did people feel betrayed buying Splatoon 2 on the Switch? Like, all the Wii U owners are being left behind. How could you do that to us?
Yeah, but that's a sequel. That's a little different. I think when...
But so was this. Resident Evil 8, the sequel.
Right, no, Resident Evil 8. But not. I'm thinking more on the lines of Cyberpunk or whatever. But, like, the Last of Us was a perfect example. Like, The Last of Us Part 1 was really pretty on PS3 also. Like... But that came out very quickly when PS4 launched. So you had to think that was something they were already doing, at least in some respect, in some aspect, especially considering when you consider the cell processor versus the technology in the PS4. But I don't know, man. Like for me, I want some really kick-ass games. I want like two games that are going to take me through the holiday season. And I'm one of those people that always puts the old system away. So I'm really hoping that this thing is going to be truly backwards compatible. Like I can put my disc in it. But again, we don't have that information yet. But hopefully we will soon.
We sort of kind of do. Like, I mean, granted, once we get like, I mean, my guess is that we're going to get another PlayStation conference digital thing to go over like the features. And that's when we'll learn about the price and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But a story did come out where they did confirm that I think any game after July has to be compatible with the PS5.
Mm-hmm. Right, but how do you handle people who bought physical for PS4 and then bought the all digital edition PS5?
It's a great question that I'm hoping gets answered.
Yeah. That's like the big thing, because if I can carry my library, digital or physical, over to PS5, if I get the digital edition of PS5, like I'm 100% in on digital. Like I don't need discs anymore. I'm at a point in my life where the shelves are getting crowded. I'd rather just sit here and on a whim say, all right, I got money today. I don't have to go to the store. I could just boom, download, done.
Well, Steven, I think I have the answer to your question. I think you're buying the game a second time. Because if I have a disc right now of a game, let's say Last of Us Part 2, and I want to have it on digital, I can't download that on the PSN store. Even though I've bought it on a disc technically, it's on my account.
Right. No, I'm talking more about the switch to, if you're giving people an option for digital and your marketing is saying backwards compatible, you need to make that abundantly clear that if you buy the digital, only your digital titles will carry over.
That makes the most sense. Yeah. If I buy a digital PS4 and then there's a, like for example, Cyberpunk, it has the next gen upgrade, which is free for PS5 and Series X owners. So if I buy it digitally on PS4, I should get the PS5 version also digital for free.
It should just be in your library.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm wondering if there could be like some sort of thing where, and the other thing is people are going to be trading in their PS4s to get a PS5. So like one of the solutions that I had in my head was, well, you could hook them up, right? Put your disc in the system. It probably has some sort of unique tie to your system. It'll know that it's the one that's on your system. Then you're not just renting a bunch of games from Gamefly. And it, you know, pulls that to your hard drive. It matches your save or whatever, and then throws it on the PS5, and then you unplug it and you're done. But a lot of people trade in their shit, so you really couldn't do that unless you just save the hard drive. I don't know. It's a weird minefield that we've never had to deal with until now. So I'm just interested to see what they're gonna do.
That's the other. You brought up a good point with Gamefly. Like, what prevents people, like, let's say they do offer that option, are all of us playing a disc version of Last of Us?
I'm digital. Yeah, I'm playing digital. Right.
Well, me and Andy are playing disc version. Like, let's say we weren't playing Last of Us right now. Like, what stops PlayStation from knowing, like, I either I bought Last of Us or I just rented it from Gamefly to like pop it into my system? Okay, you put Last of Us and download it onto the system. Cool. I return the game to Gamefly and then I'm transferring that license.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's the hiccup. Yeah. Unless they have individual, like, you know, this disc in this system pings the internet or whatever, downloads the update, and now it's tied to your account in some way, like, in order for, because you still need the disc to play the game, even though it's completely downloaded to your hard drive. So maybe there's some sort of unique license on these discs. Maybe that's the thing that they're doing with telling them, if you're making a PS4 game, it has to run PS5, and here's what you need to do to make that happen. Here's, you know, you have to put this little encrypted code that the PS5 can read.
I got it. You got to use your camera to take a picture of your receipt. And you scan that in, and that's how you proof of purchase.
I mean, like, early on the PS4, I think it was the PS4. No, it was the PS3, because I remember which game it was. PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale came with a Vita code.
Right.
Right.
I'm kind of surprised. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, I mean, I don't even know if you could, like, print PS5 codes right now. But also, like, how does that, you know, how can you prevent people from selling PS5 codes online? That's another thing.
It's a minefield that they got to figure out. But this actually segues into something that you wanted to talk about, Mike, which was the Avengers situation.
Yeah, so earlier tonight, just like Cyberpunk, Avengers is confirmed for a free upgrade. I'm going to read from PlayStation blog just the closing bits. At Crystal Dynamics, we are gamers and we are gamer first. Sorry, I'm fucking this up. We are gamers and we have a gamer first mentality. We want to make it easy for Marvel's Avengers players to enjoy the additional features PS5 brings to the game. Therefore, we are happy to announce that when you purchase Marvel's Avengers for the PS4 platform, either digitally or on disc, and later upgrade to a PS5, you will get the PS5 version of the game with all of its enhancements free of charge. In addition, PS5 gamers can play Marvel's Avengers online with PS4 gamers, so crossplay also. So anyone can upgrade at any time and continue playing with their friends on both platforms. Marvel's Avengers will launch September 4th, and then a PS5 version will launch holiday 2020.
That's just weird that they don't mention that at all. Like, they just assume it doesn't matter. Digital, physical, you get a PS5 copy. That's just,
I think,
weird.
That, like, it's right, kind of like
a lot of detail we're gonna know more about.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like all these devs announcing holiday 2020, we're just waiting for the fucking date at this point.
Right.
Like, I'm assuming, I mean, it's not probably not safe to assume, but I'm assuming things like Cyberpunk and things like Avengers are going to launch with these consoles. Like, the upgrades should be available, I'm assuming.
I don't know.
I think Cyberpunk was like, that was later down the line. Like, when we release this other version or the better version for next gen, that's going to be free. It's not going to be a day one release on both systems, I think.
Right. I mean, yeah, they were the ones, at least for Cyberpunk.
Yeah.
They were the ones that planted the flag and, like, I think really got this ball rolling of everyone else being like, oh, fuck, the most anticipated game that's going to sell gangbusters is doing this. Okay, I guess we all have to do this now.
Right.
True. All right, so now we're going to end the news here with a double whammy of Last of Us Part 2 news and information. First, Andy, let's hit it off with yours here, the one that you put in here, because Last of Us Part 2 is getting review bombed by a bunch of angry
people. Oh, that's that we're going to go with that one first?
Yeah, because I want to end on a happy note. I want to end on, hey, you guys are really mad about this. Well, a certain, like 4,000 of you are really mad about this. But it turns out many, many millions more aren't.
Right. So I don't want to get into the reviews themselves, because, like, if you actually go into the Metacritic scores and you read some of these reviews, like, they're not all just like, you know, your typical angry mob. Like, there are some valid concerns in there. Now, I can't take a concern seriously when you have a zero score attached to it, because, okay, that's kind of dumb. Like, if you have a general issue with the game's, I don't know, gameplay, storyline, whatever it's going to be, I get that. But putting a score of a zero or a three when this game is hardly anything but a zero or a three makes no sense. But I want to ask you guys, so it is getting review bombed. That's it's obvious. But do you think there is actual critique to be made of this game? Like, is this game a perfect 10? Is it a masterpiece? Or is it flawed in some ways?
Somebody who's only 8 hours into it, I would call it a masterpiece.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely some basic, like, some storytelling pacing issues that I could say, oh, that I would have done that a little differently, or I wish they would have done that a little differently, but I'm still, like, completely enamored. My mouth is agape. I'm drooling out of my face about, you know, what I'm doing from moment to moment. The thing I don't understand is why this is such a big deal. Like, why Metacritic user scores are a big deal in any way, shape, or form. Like, they're not professionals. They're not people who are that they make their living off of critiquing art pieces, like interactive art pieces. Like, that's not what they do. They are just, for the most part, people who just want to shit on something. Like, why do we have that option? Why is that a thing? I don't really get that at all. I could understand for something like Angie's List, where customers should be reviewing the thing. But, like, on this, it's like, hold up. Really?
I think we need this, though. We need both takes. We need the paid critique and the fan input as well.
The fan input comes from a different a different avenue, though. Like,
or the average user, I would say, not the fan, just
sure
the us of the world.
If a consumer wants to review it, download GG and create an account, and, you know, do it there, like Letterboxd, you know. Not something that's gonna put, like, a bad number with, like, also I know I haven't seen any of them, thank god. A lot of those reviews are just spoiling the shit out of the game. It's just another avenue for people to throw spoilers in.
Right.
Which is, like, you know, fuck off. Like, yeah, I'm in the camp that they should do what Rotten Tomatoes did with Captain Marvel, and, yeah, disable comments or whatever. Like, what, you know, just, like, get rid of the user stuff.
Oh, disable comments. I'm not for that. Just censor people now, Mr. Man?
Sure. I don't think that's censoring as much as it's not giving the opportunity to need to censor.
Right, but if you've combed through those reviews, the bulk of them aren't what you think they are.
No, but they're not, but again, they're not useful, because a score is attached to them that doesn't mean anything, because the story here isn't people that have legit problems with the game. The story is the scores that people are giving the game in a user critique. Like that's what, right. what that's where the attention is going. So if you want to be right. taken seriously and you want your opinion to be read and heard, you can't do exactly what you said, which is have legit concerns and give a game a zero. That makes no fucking right. sense.
Right. Cause you can't say like, I love the gameplay. It's a gorgeous game, but you did so-and-so in the first 2 hours. The game is now a zero. Makes no sense to me.
Right.
Whatsoever. Yeah.
Metacritic is not a place for your blog.
Listen, like
exactly.
I've played the game for again almost 20 hours now, and I have legitimate narrative concerns with it. Actual critique. In my mind, it's not a perfect 10. It's like an 8. It's like, again, to pull up Metal Gear Solid 5 for the 10th time this podcast. Great gameplay, but it had a very, very bad story. It was it had no story. Oh, it's not a perfect game. Get out of here. What?
Oh, Metal Gear, I haven't played. I never played a Metal Gear. It's fine. No. I don't give a shit.
I'm talking about Last of Us. That's not a perfect game whatsoever.
But, I mean, yes. You're entitled to that, but you're not going to go up there and tell your concerns and give something a zero.
Now, let me ask you this. If I don't like The Last of Us 2, does that make me an incel? Does that make me a bigot if I don't like this game?
Because that seems
to be some sort of convenient shield happening too from any critique of this game.
I think that is because it's a elbow. I've seen that out there. Reaction. That's right. That's a knee-jerk reaction, and that's because those were the people that were floating to the top. The loudest criticisms that floated to the top of all of this, especially in the first 48 hours, were those views.
I mean, the game's out for like less than an hour and has like 20,000 bad reviews. I mean, those aren't real.
Right.
Those were based on the leaks.
But that's where the story. I would imagine. But that's where the story started.
Right.
That's where this click. You know, that's where this 3.3 started. whatever. But obviously that's the minority. Obviously that's not the case because The Last of Us 2 is Sony's biggest launch this generation.
I mean, yeah, right. Surprise.
And this is only based on boxed copies.
That's crazy.
And this is coming from Eurogamer, and I don't know if this is just UK either. But because they it seems like it's only UK is really being counted here, but they say that The Last of Us 2 has dethroned Animal Crossing New Horizons as the biggest release this year, and it launched with 40% higher than Animal Crossing sales. Again, this might just be UK, but they also said that this does not include UK's digital sales, and we know that the UK is still under a pretty severe COVID situation, so I would imagine there are way more digital sales than normally there would be. I mean, I know that a lot. I know almost everyone that I know has a physical copy, got it delivered in the mail. Like almost nobody went to an actual store to pick it up. So unless it was like a curbside pickup, but nobody is going to GameStop to line up to get The Last of Us.
Also, let's also say this is an M-rated game as opposed to what Animal Crossing is, like for kids and, you know, gamers of all ages. And to have this game surpass it by such a huge margin, it means huge numbers in sales for Last of Us 2.
Yeah.
Underage kids playing this.
This is not going to – I would not be surprised if this hits 20 million.
Yeah, no. And especially, like, let's say hypothetically – again, no spoilers or anything because I'm still very early in the game, like – yeah. If this does reflect Last of Us Part 1, where we do get another standalone thing and that gets added to a PS5 version, it's going to sell even more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the one thing that PlayStation has done really well this generation is really bank on the strength of their first party games and let them shine and let them breathe and market the shit out of them. And I think the real test for me is going to be Ghosts, to see what they do with this new IP that has looked great in some and then looked kind of samey Ubisoft like in other instances. Like I don't know. I'm still on the fence about that. That's something I got to get my hands on before I can make a judgment, but it just seems like they're just kind of rolling and just one after the other. Really, I mean, Dreams was kind of a miss, I guess. If you think about it, I guess Dreams was kind of like a...
Well, it depends on what you mean by a miss. Like, they know like, that all these games aren't going to be like a Spider-Man or a God of War caliber in sense. Right. But it just goes to show you how the library that Sony has, it's a very diverse library of games
right.
that they offer yeah. players. It's not all the same stuff. Like, it's not just all shooters, all multiplayer, just the same stuff over and over. It's a very diverse roster of games that they offer, which I love about Sony.
And I think this is the strongest the first party's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And also, after murdering people in Last of Us 2, I can go for more than Ghosts. So bring it on, I say.
Bring it on. Andy, do we have a hype zone?
Oh, we do. We do. I think it's a story you erased because I feel like this shouldn't be ignored because it's so outrageous.
Okay.
Facebook Gaming bought Ready at Dawn or acquired Ready at Dawn today.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah, I removed it only because
what was
like,
the guiding force behind that decision, I wonder.
Ready at Dawn, as far as what I remember, was doing a lot of VR stuff.
They were.
Yes, they were.
So that is probably a 100% you now work for Oculus. You are now an Oculus developer.
This sort of came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
I was shocked by this news.
Yeah, they're doing they did all the Lone Echo stuff, like their last few games. Yeah. Lone Echo, Lone Echo, Echo Arena, Echo VR, Echo Combat, Lone Echo 2. Like, yeah. It sucks on the bright side, I want the order, but you know, whatever.
Well, I was gonna say Sony, I guess, still owns that IP.
Yeah, they own it. Yeah,
right. So maybe give it to a more capable team that didn't just make PSP games and can make a nice fully fledged third person shooter.
Don't talk shit about the order. The order is fantastic.
Listen, I loved it, but again, it's a deeply flawed game.
No,
it's way too short.
I don't mind that. I like short games.
The Order was almost a game.
It was a nice $60 two-hour game.
I enjoyed my time with that 7 hours, and I was really hoping for more, and we didn't
get it. At the end, man.
I enjoyed all those, cutscenes and all that stuff.
It was a beautiful game. All right, let's hit up the mailbag. Let's see if we had any questions. I didn't ask for any today, but okay, here we go. This comes from Farmer Pete. He asks, does the sound of an unexpected clicker still make the hair on the back of your neck stand up like it does to me?
Can I answer first?
Yes.
Farmer Pete, the answer is no, because vengeance is mine. And I fear no clicker.
See, for me, the answer is also no, but for a different reason.
Bathe in his blood.
The answer is no for me, because without giving anything away, there are much scarier sounds out there in this version. Mm. In part 2. There are some scarier things that you are going to be hearing as you play through this game. So, Godspeed, sir. Godspeed. Jogon, did I read this last time?
You know, I was going to say the sound of the human victim choking on their own blood is a little bit
disturbing.
To get the hair on the back of my neck stand up straight.
Oh my god,
sure.
Yeah. Holy shit. The first time I encountered a clicker in this game, yes, terrifying, but referring to like what you guys are talking about, yeah, no, there's worse things.
Yeah. There was one time where there's a heavy melee weapon that you can pick up that is clearly like heavy. It's meant to be used like once or twice because it's really powerful. And the first time you hit a human character in the bean with that fucking thing, holy
dude,
shit.
You just chunk their face off.
I also shot somebody with the rifle when they were looking to the side and it peeled their face off.
Oh my god.
I heard them die and I was like, oh shit, great headshot. Dude, and I walked over and their face was gone. Just their face, and it was hanging by their chin. It was like this. It was so fucked up.
This
like,
is why
shit.
I think whatever issue you have with this game, whether how the story is presented and what have you, our industry gets pummeled left and right about being too violent or having gratuitous scenes of violence. And this game is just like, fuck that. life is brutal, and it gets so brutal at points. You surprise yourself.
There were a couple of times, and it's mostly cutscenes though. It's not like normal like gameplay. But there were a couple of cutscenes where the violence was so off-putting where I got nauseous a little bit. Like, it was just like, I don't like pansy. I don't like that. But I think it wasn't that the graphic nature of it. It was the psychological nature of it.
For sure.
Like, yeah. For the most part. But anyway, right. We got news was sent to us by Buzz Killington. He did not use his channel points, but I'm allowing him to do it anyway. Bloober Team is reportedly in acquisition talks. Oh,
reportedly.
Yes.
Sounds like a rumor.
This is coming from Gaming Bolt. It seems Bloober Team, the Polish developer behind Layers of Fear, Observer, and the upcoming The Medium, was involved in acquisition talks. As per stock exchange documents, the studio has entered into a second round of talks with six potential candidates, three of whom are from the United States, two from Poland, and the remaining one is from Great Britain. The documents don't reflect the exact nature of these talks, so they could be for the sale of Bloober Team itself, or for Bloober Team acquiring another developer, but the size of the studio, as well as the fact that it's involved in discussions with six candidates, would point for it to be, would point to them being up for sale. Hmm. It remains to be seen where these discussions bear fruit, but if they do, who Bloober Team will end up signing their acquisition agreement with, if this is indeed a deal for an acquisition.
I don't care, man. Just give me that fucking Medium game. That game looks like a Silent Hill love letter. Yeah, I'm all about it. Just give it to me right to my veins.
I'm all about cool teams getting some more money to do cool shit. So, hey, congrats to you if you're getting acquired.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I like it.
Because Blair Witch needed more money.
Yeah, that game was too short.
The best too short.
Was the dog in that game.
Yeah. Dude, like the last, like, was a half hour of that game when you, like, not spoiling or anything, the house.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
Fucking phenomenal, but everything else is like, oh, this is kind of a buggy mess.
And yeah, like, how can I? Oh, there's enemies, but what do I do? Okay, yeah. Flashlight. It's Alan Wake, but worse.
All right, that's going to bring us to the end of the show. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy is at Pants Guy. Our Facebook group is facebook.com/group/DS Podcasts. Mike, where can everybody find everything that you do, everything for Kind NYC? Just give us the whole rundown.
God, I have to remember everything. All right. You can find me at MixToundro on Twitter, Instagram, all that fun stuff. You can find Kind NYC at Kind NYC, kindnyc.com. Subscribe to our new channel on YouTube. Help me get that custom URL and not youtube.com/CWXY, whatever the fuck it is. Follow us on Twitch, twitch.tv/KindNYC. We've been doing a lot of live react streams lately. Just did a 3-hour one today with Crash and Day of the Devs and Smash. That was the other thing that happened today.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing, me and Kyle are doing New Game Plus tomorrow. Wednesday, we are doing the Avengers thing and Pokemon. So yeah, we're doing a lot of cool stuff there. We have two podcasts under Kind of NYC. The first one is Platform Agnostic at Plat Agnostic. That's our video game show where we just casually hang out and talk about the games that we're playing. And Dollar Slice Podcast, that's our more community conversational podcast. That's at Dollar Slice Pod. Both of them are streamed every Friday on Twitch at around 9-10 p.m. Eastern, and on major podcast services the following Monday. Is that all the video game stuff? I think so. Jesus. And then you can find my music stuff at R Wings Music. I just released a pop punk version of the Bugsnax theme song, which is surreal.
It's gone viral.
It's fucking weird, man. But I also just released I've been building a quarantine EP of just like randomly sporadically just writing and releasing songs. And I put out a record last year. And I think that's it. At R Wings Music. Go follow.
I follow you on Spotify, and I'm always happy when a new song pops up on there. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Oh, I should also mention, just speaking of R-Wings, I did just release a song for like all the protesters out there. If you go to rwings.bandcamp.com, you could pick up a shirt. All the proceeds are donated to the Brooklyn Bail Fund. So rwings.bandcamp.com.
Awesome. Awesome. Support us, everybody. Do the thing. We want to thank Zazu Pitts of Sour Note Productions for our theme song. Thank you, Matt Murray, for our beautiful overlays. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for all of our cartoon art. Andy, what do you want to tell the kids before we go, man? Who do we got going on this week? Who's on the show this week?
I don't know yet.
Oh, boy.
It's all a mystery.
We got 2 days.
But, you know, it always comes together in the end. It always does.
It does. It does. It does. Well, I'm excited. I'm always excited. for it. I am going to get back to streaming on twitch.tv/batchild. I took a few days off to get as deep into The Last of Us as I can. I'm going to play it again tonight. Probably not going to beat it. I think I have 10 hours to go. So that ain't going to happen tonight. But head over tomorrow, because regardless, I'm going to be back on it with Apex Legends, with all the changes coming. And also, don't forget, anytime we win a game in Apex Legends, we give away a game. So make sure you're there hanging out with us. It's a lot of fun. I am almost at my goal. So if you want to support me with your Twitch Prime, if you're not doing it on this channel and you want to do it there, I'm almost at 35. I'm 7 away from 35 subs. So if you want to do that, that'd be awesome. We get a new emote. It's going to be the Chalky Milk emote. Very excited. Love me some Chalky Milk. But yeah, that's going to do it for us. Mike, thank you so much for joining us, man. This was awesome. It's always good to have a fun, articulate voice on the show that isn't just Andy and I smashing our heads together. It's nice.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime, man. Anytime. All right, listeners, thank you so much for listening. We love you very much. Andy, thank you very much. Mike, thank you. And as always, please be excellent to each other.